This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Lock and Key Unlocked, a podcast about Lock and Key on Netflix and the comics it came from. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on this episode, we are kicking off the final season of Lock and Key on Netflix.
You gotta say final rather, like, we can't even enjoy the new season before you put the final on it. I mean,
I like final. Man. I like to feel the stakes high. Mm-hmm. Like, this show is always quite stressful for our main characters, who are also children.
Yes. And still surprisingly look like children, because I believe they filmed this back to back with season two. So sad to see the show go, but bully for them for not having the Stranger Things problem of Finn Wolfhard growing 13 feet taller between seasons.
Bully for them, we say. Slap it on the package. Bully for them. I bet they make them sleep with books on their heads. So they
Yeah, they're doing the whole bonsai thing, clipping down Jocks and Robert Scott to make him stay the same size.
Yeah, they had big meetings about how do we keep these kids tiny, and that, they figured it out.
Nice. Bully for them, again, I say.
Bully for them, I say.
Well, let's introduce this real quick. So we're going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 1, The Snow Globe, which is on Netflix now. If you haven't watched it, go check it, because spoilers ho. Brief overview.
Alex, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but have you been replaced by like this sort of British doppelganger or something?
Well, I did take the lift to this podcast and ate some crisps on the way up.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That sounds all very British stuff. So I don't know what... You've changed. These kids haven't changed, but you've changed.
The crisps had different flavor, and I'm spelling that with a U after the O. I just wanted to mention.
Yeah, I can hear every U you're adding to all these words, and I don't like it.
So, brief bit of recap here. We are checking back in with the Locke family. It's several months down the road from where we left them in season two. They think they've been triumphant against the demons, and they were, at least against Dodge and Eden.
For a minute.
But they don't know about Captain Frederick Gridian, who is back thanks to the Echo Key, thanks to Eden's shenanigans. She is lying dead at the bottom of the well. And in this episode, we get introduced to a new key, which I guess we're going to call the Snow Globe Key, as Nina, who now knows about magic, unlocks it with Bodhi. Bodhi ends up trapped there thanks to two demons who were left in the Snow Globe. We'll loop back to that in a second. By the end, they have seemingly defeated those demons by throwing them into a mirror with the mirror key, but Captain Frederick Gridian now knows about the power of the keys. And not only that, by the end of the episode, seems like he can open up portals to the demon dimensions simply by holding the keys himself.
It seemed like he was smushing them together with his bare hands. That's what opened
Well,
up the
hold
key.
On, hold on. I want to come back to that. The last little bit of recap that I'll mention, though, there's a lot else going on in this episode, is we have a couple of characters who are staying away and a couple of characters are returning. Tyler is still on his walkabout. He's working construction with a lady that really wants to get with him.
As you do.
And he does not want to get with her. Up in the air.
Having worked construction in my life, I found that particularly fictional.
But we don't know whether he remembers magic or not. As you may remember, he is turning 18, the time when you start to forget magic. So that's TBD. And also Ellie and Rufus are back in Matheson, so that's a big return as well. Lots more to talk about in the episode. Lots more going on. But, Pete, I actually want to start there because you are, I think, the number one Rufus fan. What was it like to see him back on the show?
Oh, it was huge. I was very excited. I started clapping immediately as soon as you saw him on screen. It's a big return. Although there were some things in there that I was a little kind of like, oh, I wonder why they did that, you know, when it comes to Rufus. But
I wish we had a podcast where we could talk about those things. Unfortunately, we don't. So let's move on.
No time for that. Okay, bully for you, Pete.
No, Pete, talk about it. What are the things that you weren't sure about with this
book? Well, I thought we would break it down in different sections. But, okay, so with Rufus.
Sure, the first section is we're talking about Rufus and
Ellie. Okay, great. Yeah, let's keep doing this more. I think that it's a little crazy that if you're going to show a comic book panel that you don't have, I don't know, maybe one of the greatest artists of all time draw that fucking panel and give a little homage to why we're here.
You're mad.
Effing kidding me.
So in the episode, we do get to see, I always forget what it is. It's not Squadron Supreme. The comic that Rufus draws, you're going to look it up, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay. But in the comic, Rufus draws a comic in the comic. We've also seen a little bit of it on the show. So this is the same art they previously used on the show there. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think Rufus can draw like Gabriel Rodriguez. So I guess that didn't bother me as much as it bothered me.
I mean,
in a lot of ways, Pete, it's sort of insulting to Gabriel Rodriguez that a kid who doesn't have any experience in training would be drawing at the same level.
I hear you. I completely agree. But in a show that's based on one of the greatest comic books of all time, drawn by one of the greatest artists of all time, please just give me a little fucking something. Come on. Maybe you say, like, here's really what I drew. But this is, you know, and then maybe have his art next to it or something. I mean, you're showing comics panels and it's.
I just think you've really offended Gabriel Rodriguez. And I hope he doesn't.
I was trying to
come for you.
Honor his legacy. I'm trying to do the opposite.
Just to sum up before we move on to other parts, Pete, you think Gabriel Rodriguez draws like a child. On the other side of the plot line, though, I think. This was great. I really liked how they treated Ellie returning, the scene with them in the diner, with the town like knowing that she's been missing and knows she's back, even though there's a reasonable explanation for it. I really liked like the way that Sherry Somm, who plays Ellie, the way that she was playing the trauma of this experience, where you have this magical reason and then you have the realistic reason. But I think they did a good job of making it work in both aspects.
Also, I loved all the hugs. You know what I mean? Like, people super excited to see her and her kind of like not sure how to feel about it during the hug. I thought it was completely adorable.
It's interesting the role that they sort of occupy in this episode. They seem stressed to be back in town.
Sure, who wouldn't be?
That's what I'm saying. So they feel – I worry for them, as always. I worry for Ellie. This episode feels like it's going to be a bit of a return to form with some of the comic book references. Mm-hmm. I think Sparrow feels like it's coming.
Oh, my God.
Great, I mean, if you haven't read comic issue.
Yeah, I mean, the Calvin and Hobbes issue was one of the great issues of this run. And then you see the sparrow and the cat, and that was really cool. But then you got the evil, creepy guy grabbing the bird at the end and squishing with his bare hands. I mean, that's foreshadowing, and I'm fucking scared about it.
Yeah, so just to wrap this up for anybody who only watches the show and hasn't read the comic.
I mean, come on, just pick up the comic. It's really,
yes,
you're not going to be.
It looks like it's drawn by a child. Is that what you're saying? It's great. This is one of the greatest issues of the comic is Sparrow. We do get to see the animal key here in the door that they come through. That's what Bodhi and Kinsey are playing with. And I love, if we're going to jump over to that, I love like, I think this is what you're getting at, Justin, the sense of play that is back with the keys. There was so much darkness and it was so intense the last season. It does feel like a little bit of a reset. And I know Pete's going to be insulted by me saying this, but this first episode back just in total felt like it was a little bit of a slower play than the last season. Like it was a little bit of table setting. It was like, okay,
naturally,
you know, yeah, we got rid of the big bad
Justin.
Guy. And here we're back. You know, so they're not expecting the danger is coming for them once again in this season. And I like that place. Like, I was a little surprised to see that because of the balls to the wall pace of the season two. But here, taking it a little slower and playing it a little slower before it ramps up the end there, I thought was very cool.
Yeah, well, and I think two things. Well, first thing, it's Squadron Strange. So very similar. Rufus's comic book and the character that he later sort of becomes. I think the sense of play you're talking about is a lot because Nina is basically a Bodhi, a second Bodhi in this episode. And I think that's really fun to give her the chance to be that kid falling in love with the danger and excitement of the keys and messing up like you see Kinsey being like, oh, mom, why did you do this? Like the whole roles have flipped. The fact that she's in the know is so much more fun than her constantly being, you know, lost basically in the things her kids are going through is really cool. But back on Rufus and Ellie, I think Rufus did grow. No doubt about that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, he was much taller last season as well. Like he sprouted up between season one and season two. So He's basically the size of two Bodies at this point.
Yeah, 100%. Seeing them playing together will be fun. Yes, I am sort of stressed for their role in this season as outliers that are going to be brought in at perhaps dangerous points.
But I think that's great. Like, we love Rufus for the comics. He's such a huge character to the endgame and everything that's going on. To have him back in town, even if it is like, why would they come back here? You know, logically, yeah. Why they come back here? I don't know if that makes sense. But it also doesn't matter because, like we're saying, having Rufus with Bodhi is what's fun. Having Ellie with Nina is what's fun. And it's going to be more interesting to watch and have them be part of this endgame since they were so important to everything that went on in season one. Why don't we talk about Kinsey since we touched on her? Because she, like you're saying, Justin, is definitely like more adult this season. She's
the boss.
Yeah, she's the boss. And she is. Amelia Jones is a boss. Go ahead.
The boss.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the mom being Bodhi thing. It's really great to have mom in the mix. You know what I mean? I feel like it's a fun choice, but it's also super stressful because she doesn't know what she's doing as much. And, you know, from now on, guys, let's just wait for everybody before you start fucking using keys. You know what I mean?
Everybody. Like,
I just have a quick question. If I had said, well, we touched on Nina, let's talk about Nina, would you have started talking about Kinsey?
Yeah.
Nope. Oh, I was just... Okay.
Alex, Kinsey's a key boss, and you're not a key boss.
This is actually a little something that I like to call the Kinsey test, which is finding out what Pia's going to talk about.
Okay. Smart. Yeah. Interesting that it'd be Kinsey.
All right, well, let's talk about Nina then, since that's what you want to talk about, Pete.
Well, he's brought something up, and I was just
totally. Yes, absolutely. It's fine. But this
rehearsal's going really well.
It's the first episode back after a while. We got to roll into it. We don't do frequent podcasts or anything, so we're a little rusty.
You're a little rusty. Like Dorothy and Ada, you're a little rusty. Mm-hmm. I was jumping to another topic. but let's talk about Nina real quick. Like I said, I think her sort of childlike wonder at this is great, and she is a badass. She throws those demons into the mirror like nobody's business.
I love that, and I love that moment of callback of seeing herself wave to herself in the mirror and her being like, nope, not doing that this time.
I fall for that. Thank you.
So that's great. I love how these characters learn from the situation they've been in, and now, like we're talking about, Nina, now that she remembers the magic, finally can learn. She's not stuck in the pattern. She can grow.
And it's such a relief, once again, that she knows, not only she knows going forward, but she knows that she wasn't crazy going backward. Like, it's just such a relief, I think, for us as the viewer to be like, oh yes, good, she's with them, and we don't have to worry and wonder about how she will suffer because of what's going on.
Well, but that's the thing, right? And I had a big feeling about that this episode, like you touched on earlier. All these characters are going to suffer. Like, we're getting like a fun episode to start off with two demons that they dispatch pretty quickly, but Frederick Gideon is so much worse than they could possibly imagine. So he seems to be like the king of the demons, basically. So they don't know what's coming for them. And all of this stuff where we're setting up, Nina's pretty happy and she's having fun with the keys and Bodhi is teaching her. And Kinsey's like, oh, mom, I'm the mom of the house now. And even Tyler is like, I'm just, you know, doing my construction thing and I'm fine with that. They got stuff coming for them. Their lives are going to get wrecked by the end of the season.
Because the wedding, the seating arrangement for Hot Josh is going to be problematic.
So let's... all right, I need to... Because I need...
I knew this is going to activate Pete. Let's up! Hot Josh, Sean.
I needed, like, last season, I needed, like, a little something because they were like, oh, yeah, the wedding. I was like, who the fuck's getting married? I was like, what is happening here? And then when it came to Josh, I was like, wait a second. Was this guy, I couldn't remember if he was good or bad or where he kind of fell. I needed a Josh recap because I don't know, something about him I didn't trust, but then I knew he was on our side for a little bit. And I was like, I can't remember where I know you guys were all about Hot Josh.
Well, you were, and this is just a recap. You were also all about him, Pete.
No.
You were super into Hot Josh, and you kept talking about Hot Josh.
You said you don't remember,
so I'm reminding you of that.
Yeah, we need to unlock the Pete's hot Josh memory. You say we need to unlock because you actually were like, I want to call him hotter Josh. Let's call him hottest Josh. You were like, make him hotter, and I were like, he's just hot Josh, Pete, and you kept pushing it.
I was a little thrown with that scene when he came back because I vaguely remembered from the end of season two, like, well, he left town forever. And then I remembered like, oh no, he just went on a ski vacation with his daughter for like a weekend. And that was pretty much it. But it's
and
nice
he doesn't
back.
Know anything about anything. Also, he just has some connection to the Revolutionary War Matheson. And we haven't figured out what exactly that means, but he
may
be.
Well, his ancestor was there, but I do think there's more to unlock.
Yeah. So, POS Josh also comes in spouting some crazy stuff because it's like, first off, we all know the dinosaur nuggets taste better than regular and fucking nuggets. I mean, that's just fucking, I mean, I don't know why you come in like hot like that. That's just ridiculous.
You don't know why hot Josh is coming in hot? I got news for you. It's the stubble. But let me say, Pete, when he said the line about the dino nuggets, I knew you were going to have a problem with it. I knew it right then and there. And you, like a magician, I'm opening an envelope and revealing that I had written down Pete's going to be pissed about the dino nuggets for some reason.
I hard disagree.
Let me ask you a question. Have you gone back to the Museum of Natural History and tried the dino nuggets recently? Because they suck. They used to be good when I was a kid. Now, not.
Oh, yeah. For those listening,
because
dino nuggets
changed
are
the recipe and not anything.
They're little pieces of bone that you eat right off the model in the Natural History Museum. Take a bite of a dino nug.
Yeah, if you ever go to the one in New York, you can just pull out whatever you want from any of the exhibits. It's like a buffet in Las Vegas.
Yeah. In Las Vegas.
In any case, it was nice to see Josh back. I love him having no hesitation, being like, yes, absolutely, I'm coming to the wedding. Let's do this. This is great. I'm back. I'm all in. So I thought that was nice, and I think he's probably going to die or something.
So. I hope so.
You don't even know why you're mad at him anymore. You forgot why you're mad.
I just don't trust him. Yeah, don't trust him.
I do think we can trust him. I just think there's more story to tell with him, and I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
He was way too into the house. It seems like he has a creepy motive. Don't trust him.
It does seem like he has some sort of passion or even obsession with figuring out, finding the information that he's missing. And I think that might be his undoing at some point, it seems like.
Yeah, potentially. His undoing is his interest in history. I agree. And same thing for all
historians.
Like all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. They're reckless historians. All those who don't
learn from history are not evil, is what I always say. And those who learn from history, evil.
Yep.
Dead. Dead. Highway 100%. To the danger zone.
So that's Dina. Why don't we move over to Kinsey? Is that okay, Pete?
I think that's a great idea.
Okay, great. So Kinsey has a lot of stuff going on. She's working with the Savinis. Her boyfriend, her BF, is gone, I guess, over at school. I wonder if he's going to come back anytime this season.
No mention. No mention.
Weird. Just going on with the CTVDs, and they're working with Gordy, a character who we met very briefly in the previous season, but seems like he's going to be a big deal going into this season. What'd you think about everything that was going on with her and with the Savinis?
To me, Gordy has teacher of the dark arts from Harry Potter energy, where he looks weird and is like staring very intensely at everyone, but we don't know anything about him or what his deal is. So I want to put a pin in him just mentally this season, because I think something will happen. And he was set up at the end of last season as being there in the past with the rest of the Locke family and the original group of key wielders. So I think we're going to get, like we've talked about, some time travel episodes, and I'm sure he'll play a part there.
Yeah,
I was happy to see Doug back and throwing his opinion around. That's fun. Also, I like the show within the show. It's fun to see the kind of like acting they're doing within the acting. I think that's just fun stuff with the monster movies. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that video turns out. I have a feeling it's not going to go the way we think it's going to go.
Do you think the Savinis have sold out by taking the money to make the tourist video?
No, because, you know, it seems like they're still going to put their artistic stamp on it, you know, so I feel good about that.
And do you think that anyone can replace Gabe's role in the movie?
and Kinsey's love life. Because you're a big Kinsey shipper, right, Pete?
No, I was not.
We've talked about it a lot. Let me just look through the podcast. Yes, you mentioned him all the time.
Oh, you're just going to look real quick? Yeah.
Oh, I have a whole running dialogue of all of everything we've ever said.
Wow.
Because I'm a professional.
That's a lot to keep track of.
You're right.
I like the place, like I was mentioning earlier, that Kinsey is in here. I appreciate the fact that she's learned from all these encounters she's had with these demons and immediately knows to grab the keys, knows how to track everybody down, is on top of it, is wary of everything that's happening. And I like her place in the family, too. You know, just all the texting scenes with Tyler were really nice. All the stuff with Nina was really nice. It's great. She's really stepping up. And just to touch on the Savinis briefly, love seeing them. I hope we get to see more of them this season because they're such fun characters. Sure. And they got sidelined a little bit, I felt like, in season two. So I want to see them in the forefront, knowing what's going on, part of the action in season three.
I just feel like their movie's getting a little bloated. Like, mm-hmm. where are we at with the story? It's a classic Hollywood tale where there's too many producers and it's just getting a little messy.
Well, it's hard because you got a line producer and you got supervising producers. And who can tell the difference? You know what I mean? It just seems like a lot of fancy names they throw around and who knows what they actually do. But my point is, how dare you attack them? We haven't seen their finished product, so there's nothing that you should be throwing around at them yet. So wait until you see it before you judge.
I want to talk about the demon ladies a little bit because that seems like, I mean,
Aiden
first
and Dorothy?
Of all, yeah,
Aiden
there
Dorothy.
You go. They
Wheeler?
There feels like a lot more story to tell there because we just find them in the snow globe. We don't know how they got there. They do know who Frederick Gideon is and immediately pay fealty to him. So it feels like in terms of how they got trapped in that snow globe, there's more story, I guess, is what I'm saying, just to repeat myself. But what did you think is going on there? What are your best theories about where they came
from? Well, it's just a little disappointing that the mom is like, oh, yeah, this snow globe accidentally fell off. It's like, no, obviously people keep their demons in snow globes. Like, you really got to watch what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I mean...
I think you just run out of gas.
Yeah, I'm frustrated. Obviously, you keep demons in snow globes and you throw people into the mirror world. That's just how it works. So just come on, mom.
And the snowflakes are, never mind, I'm not going to say it.
Okay, great.
I do think the Wheeler sisters is something I've heard before. Don't they make like gin or something in town?
Oh, right. Yes.
So I do think they're a deep cut to something. And I think it's, they are contemporaries of Gideon, so I'm sure we're going to learn more about their history. And I feel like they are sort of the Chekhov's gun of the season. Keeping them locked and loaded in the mirror world, they will definitely come out. And
I disagree. The Chekhov's gun is going to be the chowder. That, you know, we got to
Chekhov's chowder.
Yeah,
very famously, Chekhov said, if you introduce chowder in the first act, you got to eat that in the third act.
He did talk like that, too. That was very progressive this time.
But good call on the gin. That is a good little Easter egg throwback there. I think they're going to have to pull them out of the mirror dimension to get more information on Frederick Gideon. I also think in the comic books, we've talked about this on the podcast before, and anybody who's read the book knows about this, but there's a storyline, I'm blanking on it, Clockworks, right, is the volume where Kinsey and Tyler travel back in time using a key in the house, but the way that they travel back in time is you're kind of like there, but nobody can see you, so you can't interact with anything, and they go back to Revolutionary War times, find out a lot of information about the keys and the beginning of the house. We've seen a lot of that on the show already, but I do think we're going to see that key in action, like you were saying, and some time travel. So whether they show up by being pulled out of the mirror dimension or alternately we just see them back in time with Frederick Gideon being turned into demons, there's more story to tell there is my point.
And you noticed the one of the sisters threw a clock at Kinsey and got cut in half, and then she later healed it in the
Love the casual use of the mending cabinet here, that they're just using it to store all of the keys. And Kinsey, without even referring to it, is like, taking these broken pieces of the clock, put it in the mending cabinet, pull it out, all good.
Dick, how she cut that clock clean in half. Dude, that was a hell of a chop.
Yeah.
I was going to say that in an episode that was like sort of like just easing back into the Matheson lock and key world, you know, Bodhi was in real danger. And it was the kind of when the sisters left with the key, I was like, huh, I forgot this show really makes you feel stuff like that. And it really makes the keys seem as dangerous as they are to the characters. And I think that's hard to do. And it's a testament to how great the creative team on the show is. But Bodhi almost died. So that was pretty stressful.
When they found him all curled up with like the snow on his eyebrows, it was so upsetting.
He's cold.
Yes.
Very cold.
Absolutely. I thought he was dead.
Oh. What would you have done if they killed Bodhi in the first episode, Pete?
Controversial.
I would have really lost it.
While we're talking about Bodhi for a sec, I do think we get some clues in the beginning of this episode about what we're going to see. We see a lot of the sparrows. Gideon later grabs a sparrow out of the air for no reason and just crushes it.
Oh, he knows. He knows what's up.
Like we said earlier, we're going to get the Sparrow issue of the original Lock and Key series. So if you haven't read that and don't mind some spoilers for what might be happening in this season, great comic that I'm excited we're going to get to. And we have our opening credits where we get a lot of little images of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch of keys in these opening credits, including the animal key and others. And I think the hourglass key was there as well, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I just want to loop back to this because we still got to talk about Tyler. We'll get over to him in a second. But big spoilers for the comic books, Bodhi does kind of die and they manage to bring him back using the animal key. Do you think that's something they could do and get away with on the show?
Yes.
100%. I think they're going to do it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Oh, no.
You don't think so?
I don't know. I think there's a difference in killing a kid in a comic book versus killing a kid on a TV show.
Definitely. But I also think this show goes pretty hard, and they've already put sort of the danger mark on Bodhi in this episode when he very stressfully almost dies.
Yeah,
so I do think there are ways to do it that aren't as fraught as what you're talking about.
And it was also pretty hilarious how Bodhi was like, I'm never going to play in the snow again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about Tyler, though, because he has this little side quest that he's going on. He, as we mentioned before, he's doing construction. He is being romanced by a pretty lady who really wants to get with him and not really returning Kinsey's texts, though sometimes at least he's looking at them.
That's pretty upsetting. You know
that's
what I mean?
The important part.
You got to text back. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. He starts to. You see the three dots, and then he doesn't actually do it. So they know he's alive. Yet. That's the important part. I always text my family proof of life once a day.
Dots? You send them a couple dots?
With the newspaper. I take a picture of me with the newspaper so that they're alive.
Oh, that's not creepy at all.
Dad, you're downstairs. We know you're alive.
You're sitting across from me at breakfast. Justin, you were mentioning earlier that you work construction. Talk about the accuracy of this story.
I also work construction.
Oh, you did.
Okay. Well, Pete, feel free to lead us out in the construction.
Yeah, you're not going to see.
As always, shout out your construction experience as you're talking.
Yeah. But you were the foreman, right, Pete?
No.
The line foreman? Supervising
this is a deep cut joke, but go ahead, Pete, talk about the construction, I guess.
No, I'm just saying you don't see people like her in the construction world.
I agree with what
Justin was saying there. Well, not typical.
I was saying there's very rarely as much sexual tension on a construction site, for sure. It's mostly just like truly terrifying conversations.
She seems really cool, and I loved her line where it's like, it's yabba dabba doo time. I mean, that's just great. That's fun.
Love yabba dabba doo time.
Yeah.
But in general, Tyler seems truly lost in a lot of ways. The fact that he can't talk to his family. And I think really feeling if he has fully lost his understanding of the keys, it seems like it really left him. I mean, obviously, he had a lot of other horrible things happen to him last season that I'm sure are causing him damage. But I think we have to bring Tyler back in the fold, especially.
We got to. It's too heartbreaking
with
to
Nina
have him out
in the
there.
Fold. Yeah, he's going to have to relearn about the keys.
I feel like he's definitely going to get back to town. Do you think he's going to come back to the wedding, like at the end of the wedding next episode? Or is it going to be even later than that?
I think wedding. The way he sort of was talking to the girl about the wedding feels like he will be back for it.
Yeah. And leaving that house unfinished. So that's pretty shitty behavior. Right?
Yeah. Well, Well, there are other workers there that could pick up the slack. Nope. As
it seems to be just the two of them building this entire house, and they left. They left to go have some underage beers. So,
wow, I don't know, man. Alex, pissed, upset about this.
This is the sort of lax behavior that Pete lets go on his construction site, right, Pete?
Hey, man, if you need a drink to be able to hammer, that's fine by me.
Yeah,
you need to get hammered to hammer. That's okay by me, Pete LePage, line cool. foreman.
Cool foreman.
I feel like I think I showed up to one of your sites and was there was nothing being built, but everyone was like making out. It was sort of it was more of a dating site than a construction site.
That's right.
Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out? Any other plot line? I think we covered pretty much everything, but
yeah, I mean, just Doug really talking shit. On set, which is a classic cameraman move. Let's see him check my notes. I just have Hot Josh written here a bunch of times.
I really
liked
Kinsey saying about, like, hey, we got to kind of like stay together and we'll be all right. I mean, the selfie that she took with Bodie was absolutely adorable. And
that was, but I'm just going to throw it out there. That was a professional selfie. They did not take that selfie.
What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. I mean, I say this as a person who's terrible at selfies, but still.
Okay, that's fine. But God forbid, you know, a kid drawing a comic book panel can look okay.
What?
it doesn't really. Are you saying artists like Gabriel Rodriguez are basically taking selfies of comic book characters, and that's how low you think of the art form?
Oh my God.
Selfies are the original comic book art. Ooh, I don't know if that makes sense, but I got to say it out loud because there we go.
It's sequential art because you often take like 15 of them to get one good one.
So overall, I thought you were going to say something else, Johnson?
I was going to just dip into some speculation.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, I just want one more thing. I really like Rufus saying, I'm a man of the sea. I thought that was a cool line.
That was a good line. Speculation, Justin, take it away.
So we get Dorothy and Ada, and they're like, we got to get back to Gideon, the boss.
Right.
They get there, and he looks at them, and he starts ordering them around, but he also looks at them like, I don't know who you are. what are you doing here? He takes the keys and just stares at them and by the fire, and then eventually, like Pete was saying, mashes them together, and then something happens. So Gideon is a monster, but he seems like right now an aimless monster, and it feels like Dorothy and Ada may have pointed him toward the locks.
Which was weird because we left him off, he seemed so much more with it and more powerful and kind of had a plan. So it was kind of weird to see him like, and, you know, I get it. Like, camping out at night in a fire can kind of make you docile. You know, you just got a tent. So, like.
Well, I think to draw some lines here, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I do think he goes to the sea caves. He goes to where he opened the portal previously, and he can't do it. So I think his plan was open the demon dimension, get my friends out, take over the world, classic demon behavior stuff, and he can't do it. So maybe that's why he's at a loss here, because without the portal, he can't do all of that. The other thing that I thought was really interesting about the key scene, and him holding the keys, I mean, is those are his friends or his minions or whatever they are that have been turned into these keys. So I wonder if there is an emotional thing going on there of like, how dare they corrupt my demon minions like this? You know, I wonder if we're going to get into something like that.
You could say kill them. I think they are sort of dead. So maybe that is it. And maybe he, in the same way that Bodhi can hear the keys whispering, maybe he can hear them saying or screaming or something horrible like that. And that's what's driving him.
I also wonder, and I think this is just parallel writing. If so, I don't think it's anybody ripping off anybody because of the production schedules. But I do wonder if we're headed towards a Stranger Things season 4 ending type thing where he's opening up these portals all over the place. Like, it does feel like we could be heading, spoilers obviously for Stranger Things here,
but Jesus.
Heading in a similar direction. If he could take these keys and turn them into portals or use them into open these portals all over Matheson, we could head towards an apocalyptic giant demon portal, epic ending battle type thing here, which would be terrifying, but very cool.
When I saw that portal open, I was thinking that, like, he's going to, if he has access to a portal, he can make as many foot soldiers as he needs right here. And we had a little bit of that last season happening, but I think with the demon key, but I think we're going to get a lot more of it based on his, in episode 1, ability to access the demon dimension.
Yeah. Before we wrap up here, why don't we talk about the key moment in the episode? Pete, what about you? What was your key moment in this episode?
It was the cat and bird thing we saw in the front. It's going to be coming in huge later. So that was a small piece of what's to come.
Do you think there's a significance to Kinsey being a cat?
And Bodhi being a bird, yes.
We know about the bird, but is there a cat situation happening here?
Do you think Kinsey is going to maybe eat Bodhi? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, you're talking about a Sylvester and Tweety situation? What are you suggesting, Justin? What are you... What's going on?
Seems to be making you angry when really aren't the Looney Tunes meant to bring joy? But the Sylvester and Tweety situation, no, I'm not saying that at all. But I think maybe a Cats, the musical situation... Rum Tum Tugger type thing.
Okay. Sure, could be.
I hope not.
Check out that butthole, man. You know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
You do say that a lot, and I never, it could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah. What's your key moment, Justin?
It's tough. There's a lot of setting the stage for things here, but I'm going to go with... the sisters trapped in the mirror dimension feels, like I said, like something that will spring out later, and just Gideon opening that portal at the end is going to be trouble coming down the road.
Yeah, that was the big one that I was going to call out. That feels like the main thing for this season, because like we're talking about, what is Gideon's plan and what is he going to do? Well, if he could open up Dinoon portals everywhere, he's going to want those keys in order to do it. And that sends him right at the locks and potentially is a reason for Tyler to come back to town.
And I do think he is a villain that we don't know any motivation, really. He's just so far been evil. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to get that filled out with some of the time traveling we've talked about and Hot Josh's dangerous deep dive into history.
Well, I also think that, you know, if they do start bringing demons back and need bodies, that poor lady at the bottom of the well there, she's going to get reanimated by a different demon.
God, I hope so. She was twisted around the way they had Eden lying down there. I was like, oh my God, she is in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Just her bottom half and her top half facing opposite ways. Like, that's Bendy, though. Like, good for her, Halea Jones. We had her on our live podcast once. She's Bendy.
She worked all season to get that Bendy.
Yeah, to turn her bottom half 180 degrees. If you want to learn how to do that and support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub.
Also, there's no more flexible guys in the podcast than the three of us. That is for sure.
If you want to talk to flexible people, podcasters is the way to go.
Very flexible.
We do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to talk to you about Lock and Key. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Lock and Key Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep it locked right here.
Bully for you!